When I was interviewing the CEO at GitLab, when I was making my way into this role that I have now, he said something really profound. He said, I believe that there are two things that could double the world's GDP in my lifetime. One is artificial intelligence, and the other is remote work at scale. Do you want to be a part of that second one?
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. On this episode, I'm pleased to introduce you to a future of work trailblazer. His name is Darren Murph, and he is the director of remote work for GitLab, an international software services company that has a 100% distributed workforce. In his role, Darren supports all aspects of remote work for his company and coworkers, including the establishment of best practices that he and GitLab share to the world open source. GitLab has no office leases, so their people live and work where they want across the globe. And it is Darren's mission and his pleasure to help those who want to move to find communities where they may live and work joyfully. We cover a lot of ground in this episode, and I encourage you to listen to it in its entirety to discover how a future of work doing meaningful work need not mean commuting many hours and miles each day to a traditional office. Indeed, at GitLab, work is part of the day, not the day. I spoke with Darren Murph in December 2020 over Zoom. So Darren Murph, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine. You are the director of remote work at a company called GitLab. I'm wondering if you could describe the role and the mission that you've carved out for yourself.
Yeah, so GitLab is a 1,300-person software development company spread across more than 65 countries, and we have been all remote since inception. We have no company-owned offices anywhere in the world, which is a fascinating place to work. In fact, we have a lot of scholarly research on the organizational design element of our company. And as someone who has worked across the spectrum of remote for over 15 years, it has been fascinating to end up at GitLab. They are pioneering many of the best practices and ways of working that so much of the world is looking for and embracing now. So the head of remote or director of remote work role, GitLab figured out that they needed this before the COVID-19 pandemic. It's becoming a surging role. I think you'll see a lot of companies embrace this. They're realizing that this is a sea change in the way they work. You can't just add a line item to someone's job description. You have to put a lot of intentionality around remote work. So what do I do? It's a very cross-functional role. I'm essentially the remote voice in the room, the internal strategy advisor and consultant for all things remote. I work with onboarding, make sure our onboarding is top class, with our learning and development team to make sure our manager training is best in class. And also, if you know anything about GitLab, we're an open core company and we open source all of our knowledge, and that includes remote. So I'm responsible for writing, what are we up to, over 50 guides now on how we do all things remote. And we've packaged that up into something called the Remote Playbook that we shipped out earlier this year. And to date, over 80,000 people have viewed or downloaded that, which is pretty amazing. That means GitLab's fingerprints are on the remote transitions of countless other teams and companies around the world. It's an exciting thing to be a part of.
So the question comes up is why? Why is GitLab 100% remote? Can you answer that?
We were remote by default. The first three employees were in three different countries, so there was really no other alternative. There was an interesting moment in time after graduating Y Combinator, a startup incubator in California, The team at the time did get an office because it's the thing you do. And after about 3 days, people stopped showing up and work still got done. So we figured early on, it was much better to spend that money on people and technology instead of really expensive real estate and force people to commute for hours just to do work on a computer. The founding team, they had a vision for remote being not a challenge to overcome, but a strategic and competitive advantage. And that opportunistic mindset, as opposed to the scarcity mindset, the fear-driven mindset, this has never been done before. There's no playbook for this. How are we going to do this? How are we going to prove it to people? What will investors think? Just pushed all of that aside, and you have conviction about using this as an opportunity and a point of leverage. And fast forward almost 10 years, and you have really seen that come to fruition. We're able to work more effectively, more efficiently. And we now have what I think is the world's most geographically diverse team. We have an amazing array of perspectives that's poured into our product as well as our culture. Because instead of hiring great people and then forcing them to relocate and acclimate to a new area, you hire great people and let them stay in a place that matters to them. And they can pour all of that culture into their work.
Well, I want to get to that aspect a little bit later. But the one question that I wanted to ask you now is, how did you find each other? How did you find GitLab? How did GitLab find you?
This is a great question. This digs into a really a deep and important point, which is life is really long and everybody matters. You really never know where the connection points are going to be in your life and where the dot connectors are. They come out of nowhere. And GitLab found me through a great friend at a role I had in a past life. We had kept in touch. We did not know that we were one degree of freedom away from other people. My now manager had lunch with this person, and she said, you know, I work at this radical place called GitLab. We don't have any offices, and we need this role, this person that can tell our story, but also help us paint the vision for what it's looked like, what it looks like to thrive in this environment. And she said, you know what? I know this guy named Darren. You should really give this guy a call. And she did. And the rest is history. I remember getting that call and I had to sit down. I said, wait a minute. You have no offices on purpose. You're all remote on purpose. There's actually intentionality behind this. This isn't an accident. Yeah. It blew my mind. And I knew right away that it was an environment that I wanted to be a part of. I could tell they were pioneering something really special.
You have a job that I think defies description because you're the first person I've ever encountered who's a director of remote work. There's an alchemy that's come about in creating your phenomenal role. It's part recruitment. It's part ambassador for a remote work culture. And I'm wondering what opportunities, but also challenges present in framing a remote work value proposition to prospective talent to join GitLab?
It's a great question. It's funny about the role. I have actually worked with a number of leaders and companies to help them articulate their job descriptions for their director of remote work or whatever they end up calling it. Different companies are calling it different things because no one has written this before. It's being built in real time. The need for this is being invented in real time. And what's very interesting about it is there's an acute shortage of people that are tenured, that have senior level experience doing remote work, because for a long time, you're almost biased against if you were remote. Most senior people acquiesced at some point and relocated to a major city, put their life on hold for the sake of their career. Not many people toughed it through for a really long time. So it's really interesting and wild to see that dynamic. In terms of the second question, it's been amazing to watch the recruitment process at GitLab, because what happens is when you're transparent about your strategy, when you're transparent about what it's like to work in a given place, prospective candidates can do all of that vetting before they even reach out, before they even enter into the formal recruiting pipeline. So people are able to opt in and self-select and find a culture that aligns with them. And it's baffling to me that so many companies withhold the real strategy and culture until you get in. So they spend 3, 6, 9 months recruiting you, relocating you, getting you into the office. And then by the third week, they're like, oh, surprise, this is our strategy. This is our culture. We hope you like it here. That's not doing either side a service. GitLab is very transparent. And so you can read all of this stuff before you even show up. One of the first things I did add to our FAQ when I arrived at GitLab was a section that is literally entitled, "What's it like to work at GitLab?" There's a couple of paragraphs and about four links that I'm pretty confident if you dig into, you get a good understanding of what it's like. One of the bolded lines there is, it's not a trap to work here. There really is as much to unlearn as there is to learn. And we do things very differently. And when you tell people that up front, some people are going to run directly toward that. Some people are going to say, maybe not my cup of tea. But the world overall would be benefited by companies being more transparent about who they are.
You describe the one aspect of recruiting, and I spent 20 years in recruiting, that I detested, which is I teed up great people. The rest was up to the talent and the hiring manager to create a relationship and see if it would work. The problem is with a lot of traditional companies, it is, I want somebody who's really great, who looks like this, and it's like central casting. You know, they got the Wharton MBA and they work for the right places. And you talk about bias. Yes, you bring somebody in and basically what you want to do is replicate yourself, which is terrible because why are you recruiting? To do just the opposite, to bring in new thought leadership to kind of correct the bias that might have happened. So that's why I really like the way that you are drawing talent into your company. You tee up the value proposition, the culture, the beauty of it, and you let the talent figure out first if they want to have a conversation. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I want to say two things there that I think is important for listeners because they're not remote exclusive. These are things that could apply
right
in a hybrid setting or a co-located setting. Number one is that we don't hire for culture fit. We hire for values fit. And there's subtle language there, but it's really impactful. What this means is that we want to hire people that align with our written, documented values. Because if you get values alignment when you bring someone in, that frees them up to bring 100% of their culture as a culture add. If you hire for culture fit, they may fit under the bar, which is fine, but your status quo never elevates. If you hire for values alignment, you can just let the person be who they are. And you know that on a foundational level, they will approach their work in a way that is aligned with everyone's values, even if you don't see them day to day or ever, if you have a 1,300 person globally distributed team. So writing down your values and then hiring for that is a big deal. Number two here is this great democratization is awesome for people who have historically been most negatively impacted by the traditional rigors of recruiting.
Yes.
Color, women, working parents, elder caregivers, military spouses, people who can't or are unwilling to move to a major city. Some of the world's best people, they don't fit into the typical process. So they're always starting a few steps behind anyone who doesn't have that as a characteristic of their life. When you democratize this and it's an even playing field, introverts finally have an equal voice in the room. You don't have to be the proverbial loudest voice in the room. It's not about what clothes you wear. It's not about your persona, your aura in the office. It strips all of that away and it gets to the heart of the matter, which is productivity, culture, and results. I think that's very powerful. And one of the silver linings coming out of COVID is that companies will have no choice but to look themselves in the mirror and re-architect how they do things, because people now will have every right to show up to an interview and ask, what's your stance on workplace flexibility? What is it actually like to collaborate and contribute here? I think that's a great thing. It's going to put a lot of pressure on companies who haven't put a lot of thought in that, but it's going to give people who have historically been ostracized the chance that they really deserve.
You beautifully teed up my next question, which has to do with the COVID pandemic. You started in a remote work environment long before this happened. So did I. I've been doing it 25 years and have been successful at it. But a lot of people, I think pre-pandemic, it was probably about 80% of the active workforce work remotely. And now it's going to be a lot more than that. So you're taking people who have historically delineated the hours of the day to work and non-work activity. So they, you know, I used to live in Connecticut. I'd get on the train, and take that 2-hour trip into New York City to go work at an ad agency. And you shifted your brain accordingly. And you had to live close enough to work so that you could make it work. This paradigm shift that you're writing blows all that up. I mean, you can live in rural upstate New York and have a great career working at GitLab and break up your day and have the life that you want. Go see your kid play soccer, go meet your spouse or significant other for a meal, lunch, whatever. Break up the day, maybe work till 2 o'clock in the morning. This feels revolutionary to me. And maybe the pandemic was the accelerant. And I'm wondering if this feels like a revolutionary work pivot.
It is a revolution. It is an acceleration. This was already happening, but it was going very slowly. COVID-19 stripped away all of the petty arguments on is remote good or bad, and it forced the world to embrace this is the new reality. Humankind invented the internet. We are finally leveraging it to live better lives. The key thing here is it has completely shifted the power dynamic. For hundreds of years, we have fit life around the rigid confines of work. When you have a remote work at scale, you first live your life and then fit work into that. The power dynamic has completely shifted. And to your point about you can live in upstate New York or rural New Mexico or Kenya and have an amazing career. The fact that that even needs to be said is indicative of how strange things were for so long. Mm-hmm. Why did the location even matter? For decades, business results could be decoupled from geography. You can invest in a company on the New York Stock Exchange from anywhere in the world where you have an internet connection. Right. Why can't work be looked at the same way? There's a lot of crazy traditional steeped in tradition type of answers to that. But it is amazing to see that become stripped away and truly decouple those two things. The second and third order effects of this are going to be extraordinary. You will have small and mid-sized towns that instead of having to lobby a corporate to come in and build a skyscraper to bring jobs, they'll simply build a great place to live. They'll invest in broadband infrastructure, wonderful green spaces, great medical centers, and then people will come there and bring their own jobs. And ideally, they'll be less transient because even as their career moves on and they switch jobs, they won't switch places. This is a big deal for towns who are trying to build a long-term sustainable tax base. It has completely upended town planning, how we think about optimizing our lives. You're going to see real estate listings that list broadband internet above hardwood floors and granite countertops. It re-architects how we think about everything. And honestly, a lot of the cities are going to benefit from this as well. Many have been oversubscribed for a long time. Now, instead of having to carve out tax dollars to build more lanes in LA, just let a lot of people work remotely and the lanes you have will work just fine. So there's a lot of win-win to go around. I'm really excited to see what unfolds in the next 5 or 10 years.
At the beginning of 2020, I really didn't know where this podcast was going. But now as we approach 2021, and this episode's going to run in January, I do. Because the narrative around future of work has to do with live where you want, choose the lifestyle that you want. I'm interviewing an interior designer for this coming season. And we're going to talk about how do people use their space now? These are conversations we've never had before, Darren. It's so exciting.
It's amazing. What an awesome era to be alive during. Indeed. This era will be written about. We are living history. It is happening in real time. It's incredible. It's incredible. When I was interviewing the CEO at GitLab, when I was making my way into this role that I have now, he said something really profound. He said, I believe that there are two things that could double the world's GDP in my lifetime. One is artificial intelligence, and the other is remote work at scale. Do you want to be a part of that second one? I said, absolutely. And I know what he means. If you can get reliable electricity and an internet connection to anyone, they don't even need paved roads. The next Silicon Valley could emerge from a place that doesn't actually have paved roads. There's nothing preventing that from happening. So the ability for opportunity to proliferate all over the world, we've just leapfrogged hundreds of years of necessary infrastructure building. And that's beside the point of what all of this recaptured time from commute will allow real humans to do. If we have tens of millions of people that go remote after COVID-19, and they recapture 1, 2, 3 hours of their day, and they can work a more nonlinear workday, they're less beholden to the rigidity of a 9-to-5, I'm an adoptive father. And I look at the amount of orphans in the world. If only 5 or 10% of this new population says, hey, with all this time, I'm going to grow my family in an extraordinary way. I'll consider fostering or adoption. You solve the orphan crisis overnight with no additional investment or infrastructure. How many other things like this are possible when you give humankind that much time back? I'm long on remote. I'm long on giving people more opportunity to do innovative and creative things. And I think once we're past the crisis part of this, we're going to start seeing a lot of that come to fruition.
You know, we talked in pre-interview about being adoptive parents. I am too. I adopted my daughter the day she was born. It's been the most special experience of my life. And why is because I worked remotely. I was part of her life. It wasn't Cats in the Cradle like Harry Chapin singing. And I had a rich relationship with my daughter from the day she was born. And I think you're really talking about one of the special, wonderful, unintended consequences of remote work is you can now have a family. You don't have to have the excuse of my career has to come first. That all goes away because the time factor changes.
It is phenomenal to see this happen in practice. Just in our company Slack, there was a photo the other day. It was midday for this individual. I guess midday is relative to wherever you are in the world.
Right.
It's midday for this individual. And they shared a photo of their child at a karate lesson. And they said, you know, I'm able to see my child achieve black belt in the middle of the day because I could just carve out a couple of hours to go do this and then work a little bit later this evening. That is a moment that I have now. You can never take that from me. And if I were still in the rigidity of a co-located role, I wouldn't have felt comfortable asking for 2 hours off, or if there was an hour commute in either direction, it wouldn't have even been practical to do this. This is one story. Imagine this scaled across tens of millions of people. Once we figure out what to do with this and how to reoptimize our life for something greater than a commutable distance to an office, I don't even know if we can predict the change that's going to happen, but it's going to be incredible. And humans, over the course of time, have shown to be very inventive when you give them tools and technologies and as things evolve. And I think we're going to do things that blow us away. The other thing to point out here is this is also a net positive for businesses. Some leaders hear this and they think I'm losing control of my workforce, or they're spending less time at work, so the culture is going to erode. Not the case at all. The first time that you're able to achieve one of those moments, seeing your child get a black belt, your loyalty factor goes way up. You are now much more inclined to be productive, be focused, stay committed to this organization because you appreciate the life they're allowing or supporting you to live. You recognize just how different that is from the baseline of a pre-COVID, very co-located, very rigid role. So companies have a lot to gain from this as well in supporting those types of lives for their team members.
I think another positive unintended consequence is we're going to get healthier. People who work in very rigid, co-located situations where they're doing stressful work get sick, and that costs money and it ends lives. And if we can change that, and you can break up your day and make it your day so that work is part of the day and not the day, we're going to be healthier.
No doubt about it. If you spend less time commuting, you can repurpose that for any number of things. You can rest more. That's going to make you healthier. You can exercise more. You can cook for yourself more. Be more choosy about the ingredients that you consume. All of that's a perk. You can fit things in like semi-annual dental cleanings. You're like, I'm too busy for that. I can't fit it in around the community.
Right.
You can do that stuff now. And you can also do it at like 2:30 in the afternoon. Whereas before, it's like, if you don't have a 7 a.m. appointment or 5 p.m. appointment, I'm just going to not do it. Now we can be more flexible about that. Completely agree. It's a big deal. When you give people that much time back, they can be healthier. Look, they're also less susceptible to accidents. If you're on the road less or you're commuting less in general, there's less opportunity for you to get in an accident or other people to get in an accident. And having less road rage in your life is probably a good thing as well.
Oh my God, you brought back a memory. So in the early 90s, I worked for a big advertising agency that had offices in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I used to drive the Merritt Parkway, which is this beautiful serpentine road that was built 85, 90 years ago. And I would get up really early in the morning because the Merritt Parkway would fill up with traffic by 7 o'clock in the morning. So I was out the door by six to get to the office, usually by seven. And one day I got into the office really early and my office mate, she didn't show up and I got really worried. She got involved in a 35 car pileup because all of a sudden fog happened and it was in that very serpentine part of the road. And she ended up being okay, but she was hospitalized. And actually, there were a few fatalities as a result. You were absolutely right. We adopt this kind of culture, we're going to be safer on top of it.
For sure. And you get a lot of awesome second and third order effects of even that. What will driving be like when you look forward to it? I actually think automakers are going to rethink what their future vehicle lineups are. You may have people buying more exciting, maybe less functional cars because maybe there's a lot of joy put back in the art of driving now when you can choose to drive instead of being forced to drive. And in terms of safety for physical safety, but also business safety, this is going to massively de-risk companies. If you can decouple the results that you drive from future crises, you're going to be better off. And a lot of companies have had a wake-up call now that if COVID has negatively impacted their bottom line, the thought is, well, how can we do more work that is less reliant on a specific piece of geography so that when this kind of thing happens again, it's merely a bump in the road instead of a catastrophic type of event.
I want to talk about relocation because one of the aspects of being a recruiter is sometimes, at least in the old paradigm, I would have to talk somebody who lived in St. Louis to moving to Kansas City or some other place. And if they were ambitious enough, I could probably do it. But then they would have to, okay, I've got to accept something I don't necessarily want to do. I got to sell a house. I got to move a family. But what you do is so fascinating in that you are relocating people to places that are just the opposite of it. They can go wherever they want to go. They can go to the Amalfi Coast of Italy if they wanted to. Talk about that experience, Darren.
Just say that out loud, what you had to do in a recruiting role, co-location. It is like, what a terrible way to start your journey at a company. Come work with us and do seven things that you don't want to do.
Right.
Not only do you don't want to do, this fundamentally changes the entire trajectory of your life. This impacts how often you see your family and your neighbors. This may rip you out of a community that matters to you. Come work with us. It'll be awesome.
It might end your marriage. That's the other thing. I can't tell you how many people I placed who ended up getting divorced. That's horrible.
And it's no surprise. I would be thrilled if I never have to move again. Moving is a very chaotic and jarring thing. And it's especially jarring when you look at a role and you say, this role could be done remotely. Mm. It absolutely could be done remotely. The tools, the technologies, the culture, the workflows, they all exist. And this is different if you're a surgeon and you need to be in an operating room.
Right.
There are certain high-touch industries that without a doubt either need to be done in person or gain massive efficiencies by being done in person. So what I'm talking about here are the digital roles, mm-hmm. the thought-based roles that can be done remotely. But for that sector, it's been incredible that we've done recruiting the way we've done it for so long. Mm-hmm. But it's because most people didn't see any other way. They figured mm-hmm. that remote was a career killer. They were going to be sacrificing praise and promotion if they didn't do it. Finally, COVID-19 is the wake-up call that we can do this differently. Yeah, so at GitLab, a lot of people will join the company located where they were from their prior role. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after onboarding, the gears start turning on, wait, where do I actually want to be? Where would I be happiest? Where would I be most fulfilled? That is an amazing journey to go on. That's the complete opposite of, well, I have to move somewhere. How can I make the most of it? This is, I can move somewhere, how do I optimize it for maximum joy in this one life that I'm given an opportunity to live? It's a fun journey. It's really fun to watch people have those thoughts and conversations. And not everyone moves.
Right.
Some people are relatively happy where they are, or maybe they're waiting for their spouse or significant other to also get a remote role so they can join together and then figure out where they're going to go. And some people plot and plan for years, and just the art and the chase of it is really fun. It's amazing to give people that opportunity. It adds so much to the culture. You really see who people are when you see what they gravitate to. The office facade is stripped away. There is no such thing. And so water cooler talk is much richer and more authentic, because we're talking about, what did you do in a place that matters to you? And the answer to that is very different when you have people in 65 countries.
So I want to dig deeper into the localistic aspect of what you do, because you, through your role, are dotted line helping to establish livable communities, whatever that means, rural, suburban, urban, exurban. So localism is the idea that at a local level, people can engage directly with their community and with their community government. In the work that you do, Darren, how do you think that's going to impact the future of work from a local standpoint, a community standpoint?
Communities are going to get much stronger and much richer. If anything, we've seen in the pandemic that community matters a lot more than we probably gave it credit for. The one thing that people want so desperately is a reconnection with people. And I think we probably took that for granted to some degree. I think you're going to see a massive reversal of rural depopulation. You have really rich cultural places around the world that have had their populations eroded.
Yes.
Because the people that are most ambitious eventually left to go to a major urban center because they optimized for work. And then those urban centers were eroded because the population there was just transient. They didn't have any actual investment in the place. They were just there for the career opportunity. Not to say they didn't care about where they lived, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't home. For a lot of people, that never became where they wanted to be. So think about this from the standpoint of, people can now optimize to be in communities that matter to them. Already, that's a better starting place. Now you have people that want to pour into the local government, not to just get what they want in the next 2 to 4 years, but to build a better legacy and foundation for hopefully their entire family and generations to come. Because remember, now we're optimizing for where you want to be instead of where you have to be for the career. I think the whole conversation in local communities around the world will start to change. People will have a much longer term view. They want to build something for the long haul, because even as their careers evolve, in theory, their location won't. They'll just want to continue to iterate on it and make this place better and better and better to attract more people who want to be a part of that building process. It's going to change things in a massive way. And I think for the better, if you allow people to pick and choose where they want to be based on where they want to be, then by default, you get people that want to be invested in making places better.
And the schools are better and the public resources are better because there's institutional memory. I lived in a transient community in the southernmost part of Northern Virginia. It was transient to the point where I lived on a street where I lived, 18 years, 20 years, and there were 5 and 6th owners of homes, and I was the first owner. And what that does is that people are attracted to it because the costs are low, taxes are low, schools are great. But when you lack institutional memory, things don't stay great. They actually decline. So what you are working to do with your talent to help them go where they want to go, I think is a win-win. Over time, local communities actually matter again, and people want to live there because they care about people. The schools are better. Public services are better. Things are more stable.
And think about the incentives and how they change for the better. Now you have people coming together on a local level and saying, how can we make this place the best local community, such that the world's best talent and brightest minds want to come here and make our local community more culturally diverse. So we're competing not for tax incentives to get a corporate to come in and build a skyscraper. We're competing for how do we get the world's best people, the most culturally diverse people, the people that can add the most to our local community. How do we get them to come here and bring their career? The incentives are finally in a better place. That's what you want to be competing on, not for who can give the biggest tax break to the tallest skyscraper. It's how do you get the best people to come here?
Darren Murph, this has been a revelation. Thank you so much for your time today. Before we depart, I was wondering if you could point our listeners to your social media and thought leadership. Where would they find them?
Absolutely, Dan. Thanks for having me. You can find me on Twitter at Darren Murph. You can look on Amazon. I wrote a book called Living the Remote Dream. It's a short read. It's an easy read. And if you're interested in making the remote transition, I've authored GitLab's remote playbook. Just give that a Google, end up on the GitLab site. Free, open source, download it, share it. Don't owe us anything for that. We're making it as part of our legacy. We want to help proliferate remote work at scale. You can find me on the World Wide Web, and I look forward to continuing the conversation.
I think 2021 is going to be a breakthrough year, and I hope as the story unfolds, we can get you back on to talk more about the work that you do and where you think that the workforce is going. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Happy to be here, Dan. Take care.
Links to Darren Murph's and GitLab's social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who are real-time reimagining the work that we do and hope to do. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work, doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.